Shalom Aleichem, Chevra. This is Binyamin Hammer at the National Council of Young Israel. We're happy to welcome Rebbe again to answer our Shilas. We are actually up to the 21st session of Shilas. Thank you, Rebbe.
Okay, my schos. Question one. Many times there is a delay in gathering a minyan for mincha. What is the best procedure? Sunset. How late should we wait? What if someone has a chiyuv or about a yahrzeit? What if a minyan gathers once we have begun to daven without a minyan? Can we do chazar sashatz? What if Chazal Shatz will be after Shkia? How much leeway are we about saying Kaddish Yosem after Olenu? Let's take one thing at a time. The Mishnah Brewer writes in Siman Reish, Lamed Gimel, Sitkot and Yadalad, that one should complete the Shmon Esrei before the sun is covered from our eyes. What we call in our language Shkia, which can be found in the newspapers, or now they have the Mai Zmanim, or the various Luach that come out. So of course, ideally one should follow the Mishnah Brewer and finish Mincha completely, ideally even finish Chazar HaSashat completely before the sun sets. It takes time to finish that, as many times as it takes, 10 minutes, 50, whatever it takes. That's how much before Shkia that one should start ideally. There are leniencies. The Aruch HaShulchan writes in Simen Kuf Yud Siv Hei, as long as you begin before the Shkia, it's okay. If you took a look there and in the HLRM of the Buchacharov in Simon Reish Lamed Beis, and based upon Tosis and Brochus, Dav Zayin Amanal, it's a famous Tosis, they ask Akasha, that Bilam Arusha was able to be Mechavin Es HaShoah to curse Am Yisrael. So it was only for a split second. So what could he have said? One Torah says, Kalein, kill him. But the other Torah says, once he would start at that hour, he would be able to succeed in cursing us beyond. So Mida Tova Maruba Miridas Peronius, or some want to say, if you start before this man, you can continue beyond this man, whether it be Shachris or Mincha, as the case may be. It still sounds a little flaky. There are those who claim it's based upon the Yerushalmi that way, the Gulyoni Hashas, of the fourth Bergen Brochus, and Rabbi Baraja, Rabbi Omer Chelik Zayin Simon Lamadal, it quotes from Rabbi Haigon. Now we're talking about a very classical source, going back 1,000 years plus. So apparently there's a good source to go against the Mishnah Brewer if you have to. Once you start before the Shkia, you can go beyond the Shkia. Now, again, not lechatchila, but b'diyevet. Shatz Atzchak is k'diyevet. There are those, of course, who have a totally different version of what Shkia is. Now, for us, Shkia, as Mishnah Brewer said, is when the sun sinks beneath the horizon. And there are those who say that it's called Shkia Shnia, what we call, which is an hour later than the Shkia Rishon. That's Rabbi Natan's view. That's why you go to certain Chassidish shuls. They're starting Mincha, and we're starting Ma'ariv. They have a different clock. Someone has that clock, so that's a different world. But we generally don't follow that clock. We don't usually follow it for Motzei Shabbos either. It's hard to be take both sides of this question. There are those who say you can be megal up to the Tzeisik HaChavim of the Vilna Gaon, which is about 15 minutes, maybe a little bit more, here in Chutz Laaretz, after the Shkia. But it's very difficult, because if you look carefully in the Svarim, those who are willing to be lenient to Daven Mincha and the Bein HaShemashes of the Gra, they can't Daven Marav then, because the Parshat Shat Tfilas Erev Ein Lokeva, Mishnah Brochas Chavav means whenever Tfilas Zman Mincha ends, that's when Zman Marav begins. So if you want to daven Marav right after Shkia, which many shuls do, including my own, so the only way out is to daven Mincha before Shkia. Because if it's still time to daven Mincha after Shkia, you can't daven Marav after Shkia on a pasha level. So therefore, we should at least make sure to start before the Shkia. Shas Atchak. So again, ideally, you should finish before Shkia. Shas Atchak, you should start before Shkia. Shas Atchak Godel. You know, as a yahrzeit, a chiyuv, and he wants to wait for a minyan. So someone who relies on the Bein HaShemashes of the Gra, it's hard to be moche, but I really wouldn't do it. And once you begin, even your tefillah belachash before Shkia, the Aruch HaShulchan says in Reish Lamed Beis Sivav, that the chazan can complete his Chazar HaSashat, even though he only starts it after Shkia, because the beginning is the private Shmon Esrei, and counts for Chazaras HaShas as a continuation as well. Kaddish Yosem is no problem. About Chazaras HaShas, if you started without a minion, so you have to have six people davening at the same time. That's a Mishnah Berurah Siman Samach Tes of Kol Ches. As long as at any given time there are six people davening, then they can say Chazaras HaShas. Question two, from a rabbi in Chile. The big problem, there are two cemeteries, both run and owned by conservative community, and they allow non-Jews to be buried there. They're also charging a lot of money, so there are those who can't afford the price, especially to finance a conservative operation. If they wanted to attempt to buy 60 plots, they wouldn't let them. They want to make a separate cemetery, which would require a lot of money, and the people will be upset. The Orthodox are again tearing the families apart, even in death. It's complicated. So the questions are, is this project kedai to pursue? Question one. Well, there are three problems over here. One is, you're not permitted to bury a Jew and a goy near each other. That once asked my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, where's the source for this? He said, it's Pesukim and Parshas Chayesara. And Avraham Avinu wanted to have his own burial plot for Am Yisrael, and we all know it's a Kavachoma from the Gemara, in Kovin Rosh Eshel Tzadik, which is called in Shulchan Aruch Yordei Simon Shin Tzamach Beis. So you certainly cannot have a Jew and a goy buried next to each other. Not permitted. Number one. Number two is a separate problem of price gouging. If you look carefully in the poskim, they say this is sort of part of Takanas of Gamliel, that we should try to minimize the price, at least the minimum price, of a burial plot. Now, it's true, if someone has a special kind of plot, you want to charge in Haraz Esim more money, a person has a choice to be buried somewhere else. Even in New York, there are different levels, but there's a choice. If there's no other choice in Chile, it's not permitted to charge more than the minimal cost that's necessary, and we try to cut it down as much as possible based on Kansam Gamliel. Number three, as the questioner emphasized, if the extra money were going to a cause which the person would support, that's one thing, but it's going to a conservative, where very often there are things which go against halacha. So there are three reasons why the project is kedai, but of course it's only kedai if it's possible to carry it out. Question B, which should they go back to the original owners and ask them a chance to lower the price with a threat to make another cemetery? Well, why not? If it'll work, it'll work. And if they would purchase a cemetery, what do you do with people who converted by the conservative establishment? What about the non-religious section we'd have to create? On a simple level, an Orthodox rabbi, Rav Moshe Psak, considers a conservative convert to be not Jewish. So you really should have three chalakim if you buy the cemetery. One for Shomer Shabbos. That's usually a criterion. Shomer Shabbos Jews. There are many cemeteries were named Shomer Shabbos Cemetery. They're from Bnei Brak throughout the world. That's what they said, to separate the Shomer Shabbos from those who are not. Because of what the Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, Shin Samach Beis, we mentioned earlier. And then there's one for those who unfortunately don't keep Shabbos. And there's a third for non-Jews. It seems to me that the conservative convert would have to be buried in the third section of the cemetery. Question number three. A congregant concluded a business deal with a Shomer Shabbos person who has bounced three checks him over many months. The money was about $4,000. The congregant tried many avenues to get his payment or the product back, spoke to the Rav, the Mishpacha, got nowhere. The congregant would like to take him to a Beis Din. He feels after seeing his behavior, the buyer would just manipulate the situation and schlep the whole thing along. Then he'll have to pursue him in secular court. So there are two questions. A, must he first take the man to a Beis Din? B, can he present the shaila to a posek to allow him to go directly to the secular court? Good questions. The answer is A is yes. You have to take him to a Beis Din. Try to get him to a Beis Din that he cannot manipulate. There are such institutions. If he refuses to go to any Beis Din that he cannot manipulate, that means he refuses to go to Beis Din. And then ideally, you should go to a legitimate Beis Din, the one you summoned them to in the first place, and ask them if they can write you a letter permitting you to go to secular court. Ideally, they should write you such a letter. If it's clear that the Batei Din that he is suggesting are those he can manipulate, if that's impossible, because the Bezin doesn't want to get involved in tangling with another Bezin, which is known to happen, then and only then, there can be limited cases in which he can go to a Posek, who obviously has to be qualified, who can, in certain limited cases, allow him to go to secular courts. As a rule, we don't go to Posek, we go to Batei Din. A Posek, no matter how great he is, only one Posek, only one person. He's not hearing two sides, etc. So it's hard to rely upon that as a rule. You should go to a Bezin. But if for some reason the Bezin will not issue such a letter because they don't want to get involved with the other Bezin, which they and the question of thinking can be manipulated, then perhaps the Posek could give the permission to go to secular court in certain limited circumstances. Question 4. Should a person be concerned with the Tzavar of Yudah Chosid? Specifically, should one not pursue a Shidduch if a man has the same name as the father of the lady? If I personally follow the Tzavar of Yudah Chosid, for whatever reason, should I not suggest a Shidduch in a situation where the man has the same name as the father of the lady? Very good questions. Opinions here vary very drastically. If you look at Pisrei Tshuva in Yerodeah, Simon Kuf Tez Zayin Sivkot Vav, quotes Nora Behuda Tinyana, Evan as a Simon Emtes, who claims Tava of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was only for his own descendants, was never meant to be a suggestion for all of Klal Yisrael. That's number one. Number two, in the particular incident described here, look at the Chochmas Adam in Klal Kuf Chov Gimel Sif Yud Gimel, he says, if you look in Sefer Chassidim, written by the same author, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, he says in Simon Tov Ayin Zayin, it's only with respect to Mishulashim. The father-in-law, son-in-law, and his son-in-law all have the same name. Then it's not allowed. Otherwise, it's not a problem. And Ha'olam Toim, the Olam makes a mistake, Retzachok Masonim, because they're worried about it even in a single generation. That's really hard to accept these opinions. Look very carefully. I was shown a beautiful article by Rabbi Schwat in Sinai 10 years ago, where he discusses the great length, and his conclusion, which I believe is proper, is that Tzavos, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, he was more machmer than in Sefer Chassidim. You can't bring a raya learning pshat in his Tzavos based on what he wrote in Sefer Chassidim. There it indicates that the primary target audience of his tava was his own family. That's clear from many of the contexts. Nevertheless, he seemingly had in mind, at least ideally, that even those who are not his family should keep what it says there in the tava. Now, many things are not kept. Some things are kept. This is one of the more famous ones, which are often kept. Just to give a generality of opinions. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is known as a very big machmir. You have to follow the Yehuda HaChassid as much as you possibly can. There was once a case I knew about where there was a young man who wanted to go out with and maybe marry a young lady whose father had the same first Hebrew name, but they weren't called the same name at all. One was called by the Yiddish diminution term of the Hebrew name, and he was called the Hebrew name proper, and he even had a second name, so we would think it's a no-brainer. But Reb Chaim would not give his green light until the Chosson literally changed the name that he goes by. In other words, he used to be called A. His name is A.B. Now he's called B. Nothing to do with the Shver's name, and in fact he went out with her and he married her, Baruch Hashem. But Reb Chaim's bracha, given that very significant change, now called by a different name than he was called the first 20 years of his life, which is quite a remarkable event. There are those who, in general, are lenient if there's a second name. There's a story which was told to me going back many years, 70-something years ago, a certain very distinguished Rav had an important daughter, and in those days it's hard for a Ben Torah to find a woman who wanted to marry someone who was in learning. The world has turned around dramatically since then. And when this Rav asked the young man, what's your name? Apparently the shidduch was already in his head. He immediately gave himself a second name, the young man. Instead of saying, my name is, let's say, Reuven, my name is Reuven Shimon, which wasn't true. As of then, he gave his name Reuven Shimon. And since then, he was known as Reuven Shimon. The world has changed so dramatically that the same exact story happened not long ago with someone whose name was, we'll say, Levi, wanted to have as a son-in-law someone whose name was also Levi. So this time around, the father-in-law gave himself a name, an extra name, Levi Yehuda. This is now the man, and in fact, his daughter married this person named Levi. Names have been changed to protect the identities. But they're two very real stories that I know about. And if it's an additional name, there are many who are not makbid on the Tzavo of Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, even though Rav Chaim Kanievsky is makbid. I believe that you can make the shidduch, you can suggest the shidduch, even though you wouldn't do it yourself. There's an expression in Masechta Pesachim, in a somewhat different context, Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, the Kopet Kabdina Amudei, the Lo Kopet Lo Kabdina Amudei. It depends if a person is really concerned about it. If he's really concerned, then he perhaps should stay away. But if he's not really concerned, then the shidduch can go through. So you have to use your own judgment in terms of proposing it to someone. If you think he's going to have the same problems that you have, don't bother. But if he's with a different mindset, not going to bother him, I don't think it's a problem to suggest such a shidduch. Question number 5. Whipped cream question. Well, I don't use whipped cream on Shabbos from a spray can, a deference to those posting that say it's prohibited. Well, I do know other posting permitted. Should I tell someone not to use it because I personally don't? Very simple suggestion. Tell them it's a machlokes. That's all. If you don't, you can't tell them you can't do it because you know there are other posts going to allow it. So, you know, I see you're using it. You're relying on Rabbi X. You know, Rabbi Y disagrees, and then he can decide on his own to follow Rabbi X. Is until now, he'll decide to follow Rabbi Y from now on. And sub-question, 5A. In a similar vein, if I personally conduct myself one way about a specific halachic matter, but I know that there are reputable poskim who hold a different way, should I answer a question based on what I personally do or based on what the halach is? Strict or lenient? Any rabbi deals with this all the time. It seems like this. If the rabbi himself is misupuk, he doesn't know, he should tell the questioner, I don't know, if you're asking an excellent question, there are two opinions, and you can, I'm not telling you what to do. Now, the language of the question, leads to the following possibility. Let's see how I want to give the exact phrase over here. Should I answer the question based on what I personally do or based on what the halacha is? What does that mean? The rabbi is not going against the halacha. So I interpret the word what the halacha is to mean what's commonly practiced as halacha. Okay? There's no other way to read this. So now here's the rule. If that's the case, if the rabbi has no particular opinion on his own, he should tell the questioner to follow the minhag of Rov Yisrael. If the questioner is a bit more sophisticated, then the rabbi can confide in him that he has a different opinion, whether it be more strict or more lenient. But for the general questioner, and there is, quote, what the halacha is, which means it's generally accepted by the community, then the rabbi should just tell the questioner what the general custom is and leave it at that, not to confuse the questioner. Question number 6, the laws of teaching Torah to non-Jews? That's a complicated question. The Gemara says in Masechta Chagiga, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, that Ein Limsa Divrei Torah Lenochrim. And they quote a pasuk. We say it every day. Now Tosfos there says on that daf, is it Isav Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol? It says in Sanhedrin daf Nun Testament Aleph, Goy HaOsek B'Torah Chayav Misa. So who needs this extra additional rule of based upon the pasuk in Tehillim? You have a Lifnei Iver. The Gemara has in a Masechta Avodah Zarah, the Lifnei Iver applies even to a non-Jew. Not permitted to give him Eivim and Achai if you're on the other side of the river and he cannot get it without you. It's an Issa Doraisa B'Pshuto, Lifnei Iver L'Sita Mikshol, even if he's a Nachri. So how do you add to this kasha? As Tosfos suggests, you really don't need this additional prohibition unless referring to a case where there's a guy who could teach this guy. So there's no Lifnei Iver, it's called Chad Iver Denar. You can go to a different person, namely a guy. And therefore, in that case, there's no Lifnei Iver. Therefore, you need the Iser, Limsa Divrei Torah L'Nachrim, based on Magid Devar of Yaakov. That's his answer. It's interesting, the Rav Yaakov Emden, there in Sanhedrin, says no. Goy HaOsek B'Torah is Chayav Misa, which means, Osek. Osek means he's very, very much involved. Be'iyun. Be'iyun Rav. That's when there is a prohibition. And perhaps then and only then is there a violation of Osir Limsar. It means you're giving him Mesira in a very advanced level. So it's a nativ in Chagiga. Perhaps just an elementary class, which I presume the questioner is referring to, quoted this nativ, again with Rav Yaakov Emden saying it as far as the non-Jew as himself is concerned, the nativ extends it to the Jew's role, would be permissible in such a case of sort of general education. Interestingly, the Minchas Chinuch asked why the Rambam omitted this whole Gemara. He says it's because it's Lifnei Iver. The whole of there is only Lifnei Iver. That being the case, if there's a goy who can teach it to him, and nowadays there certainly are, it'll be permissible. So that's the Sri Deish. Now, that's as far as ritual law, which is limited to Jews. What about Noahide law, the Sheva Mitzvahs? Tosfos says it's a mitzvah to teach the non-Jew the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. So writes Tosfos Dan Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel. Well, the Bach, of course, Rishon would disagree, the Bach there on the side of the Gemara. It's a machlokas. So very often, people are lecturing in the presence of non-Jews. They're talking about the fundamental mitzvah that even non-Jews are obligated to keep. So there is machlokas or Rishonim in that kind of a case, whether there is a mitzvah to teach them or maybe even a violation. One has the right to be lenient in such situations. And there are those who say the Rambam did not leave out this din. What do you mean? He quoted in Hilchos Avodim. This is the Maratz Chayes right there in Chagiga. You can't teach it to an Eved, it's a Kavachom, you cannot teach it to a non-Jew. He quotes those who make a distinction between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Sheba'al Peh. Shita Mekubetzes and Ksubas Chavches suggests such a distinction, doesn't really seem to accept it. And the explanation is given because we know that Torah Shebichsav has already been translated into English or other languages that they were dealing with then. So you're not giving him any secrets. It's already been translated. Of course, if that's true, today the Talmud has also been translated. So you begin to wonder. You look there in the Marasha and the Meiri, they say you cannot be Moser him Sodo Satorah. Sodo Satorah. That's why in Mosrim. And, you know, that could be explained Umishpatim Bal Yadom, that could mean the Sodos, because they have Mishpatim, they do have Mishpatim, but there's another Girsa there, Ein Melamdin Divrei Torah, not just Moshe, Melamdin, Tosu Baba Kamalam Chesim Rav has that Girsa, then it would be prohibited even in such a situation. It's interesting, the pasuk, which is quoted over here, Magid Devarol V'Yakov Chukum Mishpatel Yisrael Los Chanuch Ogoi, was once privileged to hear a shir from Moshe Feinstein, Zecha Tzadok Levroch, who gave here an hour yeshiva for the Association of Orthodox Jewish Scientists. I heard the shir twice. I heard Rabbi Moshe say it in Yiddish. I heard Rabbi Tendler translate it into English, reminiscent of the Gaon's Vort, about this week's parsha, that Yosef lost 10 years because he heard the expression Avdecha Avi said five times, and the Gro explains because he heard it twice, because he knew Hebrew and Egyptian. And anyway, I heard the shir twice, and there he has the same kasha. The kasha was, what do you mean, Mishpatim Bayadom? Non-Jews have rule books too. And Rav Moshe answered, but you don't need a mesira of a Rav to a Talmud. They can learn everything they want from Svarim. We can't. We have to have a tradition from a Rebbe to a Talmud. That's a fascinating idea that Rav Moshe had along the lines of the Marsha, who has suggested it's only an Isra of Mesira from Lashon Mesora, of what he calls Sodos Vitamei Torah, because the Mishpatim themselves are clearly permissible because they have to know what to do, but the secrets and the reasons, this not. Fine. It's interesting, there was an exception to the rule, according to the Marsha, not here, but in the Shabbat of Lamed Aleph, where someone wants to convert, become Jewish. So if you're not allowed to teach him anything, then how is he going to learn enough to become Jewish? So the Marsha is an exception. I mean, Evie writes so on Sanhedrin afternoon tests as well. Rabbi Bleich Shalita has in his second volume of Contemporary Halachic Problems a whole piece on this, many, many, many pages. And he quotes a Gemara in Makas of Tesam Advais, Ben Noach Hoyol Olulmod Velo Lomad. He could be considered to be culpable for that reason. Of course, the question becomes, how is he going to learn it? We saw he has no Mesorah, as Rav Moshe said. So the only way he can master it is if he gets the Mesorah Misinai. And who's going to teach him if not us? So therefore, he concludes that if the individual is interested in learning about the Sheva Mitzvahs, then we should certainly teach him. And beyond that, it's quite questionable. Okay. Number 7. A man in my community has been bothered with intestinal issues that don't allow him to sleep. He is worried that there might be a serious issue in there and has made an appointment with his doctor, who, according to his research, is also the best gastroenterologist for the colonoscopy. The only date the doctor could give him is this Friday, which requires him to swallow a liter or so of special laxative solution, which is a mixture of water and a laxative substance, from the defense of Asara Batavis, which ends here at 9:30 p.m. I think it must be the Southern Hemisphere. The next date the doctor could give him is in a few months. Is it possible to be mad at this? The answer is yes. We know that even a Chol She'ein Bo Sakana is not required to fast on Asara Batavis. And this presumably may even have a Chashash Sakana. Generally, colonoscopies are done looking for something, Chalila V'chas, which could be very dangerous. And therefore, it seems to me that not only is a Chol She'ein Bo Sakana, but it's even a Chashash, even if it's somewhat remote, of Yesh Bo Sakana. Aside from that, I hope that the listeners on the call who are old enough have had colonoscopies. I count myself on that list. I had it more than once. And let me tell you, this mixture of water and laxative substance is eino roi l'shtia. It's very hard to get it down. It's really not tasty. It's very, very hard to drink that. And therefore, it seems to me that drinking such a liquid, which is eino roi l'shtia, would not be considered breaking the fast. Therefore, and for those two reasons, I think it's permissible for this individual down south to keep the appointment. I hope it's not too late to give this psak. If he hasn't canceled it yet, let him start his laxative substance right now or shortly to to be ready to have his colonoscopy tomorrow, and we hope that he'll get a clean bill of health. Finally, as a follow-up to a shaila of sexual addiction in a 12-step program, I also have a member of my shul suffering this machla. He is married with one young child. His wife is aware of the problem and has encouraged him until now with the help he is seeking, although it is very difficult for her. It seems that the 12 steps program that he is attending is exclusively for Orthodox men. Oy. The man came to me. Apparently the Torah therapists and facilitators of the program have guided him that the next step in recovery would be to write down all of his behaviors and missteps with this machla from the beginning until today, and then it will be read to his wife so that he comes completely clean with her regarding his activities. I'm trying to stop him from doing this to at least wait till the shaila is presented. I certainly understand the need to become clean between himself and Hashem and do tshuva. But is it a Torah hashkafa to be mowed on every detail that may cause his wife to never recover her trust and even have her leave him and break up the family? Wow. It's a very serious question. We'll answer first theoretically. Theoretically, if in order to wean him away from this terrible sexual addiction, it would be necessary to go through with this next step in the treatment, I would say it is permissible, even if as a result, there's a chance she loses her trust in him, there's a chance she may even look for a divorce. He has to take care of himself. His life comes first. More than that, even his wife, at the end of the day, will gain. Again, if this would be an indispensable part of the 12-step program, and without it, he's going to go back to sexual addiction, and with it, he's going to come clean, so it's better for his wife to have a husband who is clean than a husband who continues a sexual addiction. Now, she may decide to lose her faith in him, she may even decide to leave. It's unlikely if she's with him until now, so she probably will stay with him if he's, on the contrary, embarrassing himself by admitting to all these terrible things that he did in the past in an attempt to come clean, quote-unquote, in his relationship with her. There's all the theoretical if this would be the case. I know and I don't know, so I called up the famous Rabbi Dr. A.J. Twersky and asked him, is this really even the Torah Hashkafa? Is this the Hashkafa of the 12-step programs? Does it go that far? In his words, this is a, quote, Das Yochid, which means within those who advocate the 12-step program, the vast majority do not advocate this last drastic step. And therefore, he feels that it's not necessary, to which I add the rabbi who was asked this question should continue to try to stop him from doing this. Because once we establish, based on the senior expert in this field, that except for a very small minority opinion, a quote, Das Yochid, this step is not really necessary, we've reached a point with Yotza Schara Befseda. Whatever might be gained to quote-unquote be Yotze, it is Das Yochid, will have Chalila a greater hefset, a loss. No one should lose his trust in him. There's a possibility of a divorce. So therefore, I believe that the rabbi should continue to try to stop him from doing this. Rabbi Dr. Twersky could be contacted, if necessary, to give the rabbi a firsthand report that this last step is really not necessary according to the majority of those who are helping in the 12-step process. With this, we conclude the answers for today's questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebbe. I hope we can call upon you again as the Shilas continue. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a good night. Take care. Bye-bye.